Good evening. Welcome to As the Worm Turns. You are tuned into KVNF's live call-in gardening show. I'm your host, Jill Spears, and I've got Lance in the house tonight. Hi, Lance.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Great to have you here in the chilly day, middle of winter.
Yeah.
And we are joined tonight by Laura Parker from High Desert Seed and Garden Company. Hi, Laura.
Hi there.
Great to have you here. I love your seed packets, love the way they look, and I love to grow them. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about why your seeds are so successful here in the North Fork Valley and just in our listening area in general and probably far beyond that as well. We've got quite a thing going here. High Desert Seed and Garden. Okay, 970-527-4868, 866, KVNF now. You can email us worm@kvnf.org. So, Laura, you are a Colorado girl.
Yes, I am.
Have a ranching history and got into seed saving when you were in your mom's garden. Tell us about that.
Yeah,
just a little baby.
Yeah, so I grew up on a ranch in Rifle, Colorado, and we practiced holistic management, and we had a garden, even though my parents came from West Virginia, at 7,000 feet, so they had quite a learning lesson to...
That's high, yeah.
Yeah, so they, you know, we figured out that varieties matter, and and I started really kind of saving sunflower seeds. That was my first inspiration into seed saving.
Yeah, so starting out in a high... Is Rifle considered high desert? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Colorado is high desert, the whole state. And then from there, you went on and developed some interest in the importance of food. And tell us how you evolved into your passion for seeds.
Well, so in college, I found out a lot of my colleagues didn't really know where their food came from. And so I started bringing students to farms and having speakers like Michael Pollan and Joel Salatin, and also brought Dr. Vandana Shiva, who was very inspirational for me and her work advocating for seed sovereignty. And
those are some big names right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I got really inspired by kind of global seed issues and ended up traveling and working with Vandana Shiva and on her seed farm in India.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you came, went out and saw what was happening globally, came back to Colorado?
Yep, came back to Montrose. I'm actually, you know, lived elementary school and high school in Montrose.
Oh, so that's a great place to grow up.
Montrose graduate.
Right? Go Reds. And you became the executive director of the Organic Seed Growers and Trade Association.
Yes, I did.
Mm-hmm. And what does that organization do?
Yeah, so it's a trade association that advocates for organic seed growers in the industry. So, yes, we're doing everything from like policy advocacy and education and also working with different researchers and that kind of thing.
All right. So a little bit of your history before you moved on to starting High Desert Seed and Garden, which you started in Montrose. When did that happen?
So I started High Desert Seed in 2015. So we've been in business for 7 years now.
Awesome. Congratulations. And I see your seeds all over the place. I can I'll see them in the grocery store. The grocery store would be Farm Runners.
Uh-huh.
I'll see them down at Earth Friendly Supply.
Yep.
Just all over the place. So where do you put your seeds out?
Yeah, so we have wholesale seed racks throughout the Southwest and Intermountain West. So the furthest afield we have is an account in Oregon and the Grass Valley in California and down to Santa Fe.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But we sell our seeds online throughout the nation.
Mm-hmm.
And that is highdesertseed.com.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Uh-huh. People want to go there and see.
You're in Grass Valley.
Yeah. That's a recent account. Yeah.
Okay. That's a nice area.
Uh-huh.
Sierra Nevadas.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that we talk about with seed saving is acclimation. And that seems to be one of your specialties, that you grow these seeds that are acclimated to the area and are hardy. Tell us about your philosophy and let's talk about that.
Yeah, so we say we're a regionally adapted seed company. So we're really focused on finding, breeding, and selecting seeds that meet the needs of high desert and high mountain regions. So seeds that thrive with our harsh winds and sun and temperature swings and short seasons.
Short season.
Yeah, right. And the daylight. Mm-hmm. We have intense daylight. You know, we're at 6,000 feet. You know.
Right, it's that high desert, that altitude.
Mm-hmm. And the more you grow things out, generation after generation, the better they get. Mm-hmm. You know, and I always tell that story about the Hutterites. It took me 7 years.
On those beans?
Yeah, mm-hmm. before they finally flourished. Yes.
And now those are hardy, hardy, hardy.
Yeah.
Lance has the best evidence for why I'm doing what I do, to really adapt things to place.
Yeah, you just keep on doing it.
Right. And you do a variety of different plants you are growing for seed. You've got flowers, veggies.
Yeah, herbs and grains.
Grains.
Well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, I imagine that takes a lot of planning to figure out how you're going to get all these seeds and the variety to get that out to the whole Intermountain West. And you also do bulk orders for farmers as well. Mm-hmm. Is that something that happens in advance or?
They're mostly just ordering through our online listing
or
offering, yeah.
And I think I've been on your online site, and you can tell whether or not those are in stock or whether you're growing those, growing seed, whether you have those seeds available right now.
Yeah, yeah, we're all set. We got a new new website we just put up last week.
Uh-huh, great.
Wow, well, good for you. And yeah, I was thinking of, we had mentioned cross-pollination, how many, and so you got to keep them distance and also maybe not even the same year.
Right. So how big is your plot of land where you're actually growing seed?
We've been growing on about 4.25 acres at the Montrose Farm.
Okay.
I'm actually moving up to Paonia now, but... And yeah, so it does take a lot of coordination to, there's certain varieties that are very outcrossing. So right. You can only grow one of that genus and species in a season. So there's a lot of planning involved for sure. Mm-hmm. We're always in the future a little bit with seed growing.
Yeah, right.
And, we're really selecting for the future. We're selecting seeds that can meet, this erratic climate that we've had and also are good for low input systems, so organic and restorative kind of farming systems.
Right, and everything that you do is organic. I want to make sure that I let people know that.
Yeah. We're not certified, but yes, it's organic, right. Grown using that philosophy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And that's an important philosophy. I mean, that's what we're all here about.
Yep.
And I think that's something that I can see in your history and how you've evolved into the seed caretaker, as you would call yourself.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so, I'm hoping my seeds live beyond me.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So you sort of have a seed bank. Lance has all these different storage places and jars. Nice. And that kind of thing. Are you getting all your seeds out to market? How do you manage that?
Yeah, we have a seed bank or seed offering, I guess. But we have a storage place. We're actually hoping to build a really nice place for the seeds soon. So that's a big vision that we're trying to bring into fruition.
So my question is, you have all the seed that you're selling, but do you have seed that's in the closet to plant out? Do you actually separate them? Because I actually separate stuff that I'm, going to save for the next few years and what I'm going to plant out now.
Right.
We do. We actually, we have our stock seed. So that's the seed that we've selected. It may be, like within a population, it may be the the best, most beautiful of the plants that we've tagged, and we only take seed for ourselves from that. Or there's various different ways on different crop types that we select it for to be our stock seed that then we continue to grow the seed from. We actually store it in an antique chest that's quite beautiful. Our special like seeds.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah.
Wow. Just so much.
Yeah, there's a lot. Oh, there's a lot going on here at High Desert Seed. So the other thing that you do, you're passionate about bringing new seed into the mix. So it's not just things that we would normally grow here in Western Colorado. You'll bring in some new varieties, and you're looking to what?
We like to find rare varieties that are, some of them maybe are going extinct even, and bring them forward. Mm-hmm. Rare and delicious. It's always important that they're really tasty varieties, because I don't really see the point otherwise. But I really believe that seeds are part of our culture and our foods. And I really want to preserve and push people's palates.
There you go.
I want to try that popping sorghum.
Yeah, what is that new seed you've got? Some different.
Yeah, so we're offering it's called Tepuanu. It's a popping white-seeded sorghum. So it's meant for actually popping like popcorn. Mm-hmm. And sorghums are amazing. They're usually quite long season, so it took a little bit to find one that would do well.
Wow.
And this one is known to... It does really well in dry climates and under drought conditions. It'll still produce.
Was it 3-4 feet tall?
This one gets like 6-7 feet tall.
Oh, okay. It's one of those.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mine gets about 3 feet tall. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's not that kind.
Not the same variety?
No.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No.
And you've got a Tibetan barley you're bringing in that's new to your...
Tibetan purple barley. Yeah, mm-hmm. I kind of fell in love with purple barleys and have trialed a lot of them and finally found the purple dolma barley. Mm-hmm. And it does amazing here. It's incredibly productive and really rewarding to grow. I love growing those.
I bet it's gorgeous too. You were talking about your beans and how that took you so many years to finally. Do you have certain seeds that are in that same situation? Will you grow this Tibetan barley out until you're like, okay, 7 years, it's going to be this year or not?
Yeah.
Well, there's one variety that we bred that we've been breeding since the beginning. This year we released our first kind of farm original, which is it's the Oros roasted pepper and roaster, I should say. And it's a Greek pepper. It's kind of like a preserving pepper, like the one you'd see roasted, sweet, and preserved in oil in the grocery store. And so those are usually quite long season and hard to pull off in our climate. So we've been selecting it for earliness. It was a hybrid that we used that population to breed from, and with Greek origins. And yeah, that one. And then also the sesame we released this year as well. We have been working on that one for about 7 years, growing it every year. And
sesame?
Yeah.
Wow.
And sometimes failing. And finally, I feel like we got somewhere with it. We've grown it 6 years. And so I finally felt comfortable releasing it to the public.
Great.
And that one, we were just selecting it over time in this climate and seeing it become more resilient.
Yeah. I think one of the things that I hear about your seeds is that there's great germination rates.
Mm-hmm.
I've always heard that. Anybody has feedback. So
that's good.
I was just going to comment that, we talk about open pollinated seeds, and you started that pepper as a hybrid. If you keep on working with it, you can stabilize and get the... what you want.
Mm-hmm.
But it
mm-hmm.
might take several years. It's not just,
What do you mean keep on working with it?
Keep on planting it out.
Oh, okay.
Year after year after year and doing, whatever crossings you're doing. Mm-hmm. And you can eventually get it stabilized to be just that pepper.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was about 5 years on that one for us. And I feel like it's pretty stabilized now. Hopefully. People will let me know, I'm sure.
All right, Laura Parker from High Desert Seed and Garden is with us tonight on As the Worm Turns, 970-527-4868-866. KVNF now. You can call and ask her a question.
Yeah.
So one of the things that we have here are varied soil conditions, just depending on where you are. What's your preference with soil? What do you think about soil?
Well, I actually really love our soils. I love clay soils because they at least have all the nutrients, right?
Yeah.
It's just about kind of unlocking them, right?
Yeah, which is organic matter.
Yeah.
It's really quite simple.
Yeah, and biology, microbiology in the soil.
Yeah. Right. Oh, I just love that, building that community under there. And what about fertilizing? Is that really just done with compost and organic matter?
Yeah, whatever you want. Yeah, it's done with compost, manures. And aged manure is always better. Yeah, and you can use cover crops as part of the rotation. Both, the grasses and the legumes, you know, and buckwheat during the summer. Yeah, so there's all these different ways you can do that.
That would be a low input system because it's all organic.
Yeah.
Part of the thing too for the home gardener, and the reason I'm interested in some of these grains, is you can use them as cover crop for a season and then also get a crop off of it. That's, yeah, like the black barley or the lentils or garbanzos or things like that.
Yeah, you can get, you grow it for seed grain.
Yeah.
And then the other stuff's the cover crop.
Yeah.
What's left over. After a grain crop, it's really pretty amazing how soft and friable the soil is.
Oh, really? Really?
Yeah, maybe not corn, but these small grains, the wheats and barleys and, kamut and stuff like that. It's just really pretty amazing how they
changes that up.
Yeah, if you can just, it's not clay for that moment. It's actually pretty soft.
Right. And the growing season is one of the things that you're looking to acclimate for, is that shorter growing season because we are at high altitude, or where your seeds go to be at high altitude.
Yeah, shorter season and shorter growing degree days for sure. Right. So we're trying to really find varieties that will make it here and will thrive and be abundant. So.
Right, so your seeds are going to grow in a more humid area in the western United States, but they're really going to thrive right here because this is where they're acclimated to. The altitude, the temperatures.
Sunlight.
Sunlight. Wind.
Yeah. Wind.
How do you acclimate to wind?
Well, you do. That's all I can say. It just happens.
If you say so.
You actually, if it's really bad, you put a hedge grove up. A windbreak. You know, something.
Yeah, because wind is part of our our environment
sure. What about the stars and the moon, too?
How do they acclimate to
wind? Well, to the, the plants, the night skies.
Right.
That's a whole other thing, you know.
Well, I've never thought of that, Lance.
Yeah.
That's great.
I just came up with it.
What do you think, Laura?
Well, here's something I think about, Lance. I want to hear your thoughts on it. Is that, you know, in the high desert, I think we have, like, that little bit of stress makes some of the sweetest, like, food. Like, brings the sugars up. Like, the that stress, you know?
Yeah, that stress, especially the cool nights, really just bring up that sugar content. And was it one of the former employees at the research station, say 10, 15 years ago, he got a grant to study winter squash, Japanese winter squash. I don't know what varieties they were. And the Japanese were just totally astounded at the sugar content because of our cool nights.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So it makes a big difference.
Yeah, yeah. But anytime, and you know, like, you know, I sell all those carrots, but once the frost gets on them, they really get good.
Yeah. Yeah, we're waiting for the frosty carrots. Hey, we have Jer from Earth Friendly Supply on the line. Hi, Jer.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Jer.
Hey, so I had a question for Laura. So last year, I grew your celery, and it was amazing, like so good. I'm kind of a celery freak, and I loved it. And the thing was that surprised me, it was super hardy in the cold, and then also super hardy in the heat, like it wouldn't bolt and go to flower. Mm-hmm. And how, is that just the variety, or is that something you had to work into it?
It's partially the variety. It's definitely something that it kind of had to have to. It was actually a challenging crop to get to seed here for us. Definitely the variety is a factor. But it was definitely. It took me about 3 tries to pull that one off for seed.
And well, it's fantastic. And it kept really long, too. Like, we had some that lasted all the way into December.
Oh, yeah.
To the end of the year.
Yeah.
Wow. That's hardy. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Homegrown celery. There's nothing like it, you guys out there.
Oh, my gosh. It's so different.
I'll tell you what.
It's way better than way, what you get
way
in
better.
The store.
Jared, there's a couple things to think of celery. It's first of all, it's a biennial, so it's not going to go to seed. Except. When it's a seedling, what is that, 57 degrees?
Yeah.
It's 50, if it gets 57 degrees when it's a seedling, it will bolt. And it's really sort of crazy. But after that, it doesn't matter. And stuff. So when you... Go ahead.
It is something picky. That you see, like it's something we select against. Because some of them do bolt from stress and bolt prematurely in the population. There's a small percentage that do that.
So we
select really hard against that because we don't want it to turn into an annual. We want it to be a biennial.
Yeah.
So when you say 57 degrees, that's on the high side or the low side?
That's the low side.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you don't want to let the soil temperature get below 57?
The air temperature. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that controls when it bolts?
Yeah, as a seedling.
Okay.
You know, and stuff. So it's just one of those little quirks. And because I have a friend up in Gunnison, and she grows it up there. But by the time, you know, it's cold up there, it's a full-grown plant. It doesn't bolt.
Okay.
Wow, that's
good to know.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious.
Well,
how
I'm
going to
try it again this year because it was fantastic.
All right.
Awesome.
How many days is it?
It's probably 100 something. It's 110 days. It's a pretty long crop for our area, but we do it by transplant. And often if I put them out in the spring and it's looking a little iffy with the temperature, I'll throw row cover over it. And it usually makes it through. It seems to be pretty hardy to the cold compared to some varieties. I've had some varieties that are really sensitive to our temperature swings and get bolty on me, and then we don't get a crop off of it.
So, Jared, just so you know, I actually direct seeded it in June and got a fall crop.
In June?
Yeah.
Okay. So I didn't actually grow these seedlings. Yeah. One of our customers came in that was so impressed with your seed, Laura, and he recommended that we grow this celery, and he brought me a bunch of sprouted seedlings.
Nice.
And so then we upplanted them and had that experience. So I didn't know how many days it was.
Woohoo!
Yeah, but that's me. Most people don't direct seed those kind of things, you know.
Okay, cool.
So yeah, start your seeds now, right? February.
Yeah, now I got to select it for direct seeding. I'm going to have to do that now.
Yeah, it's difficult. Yeah.
All right. Well, cool. I really enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Jer.
Thanks, Jer. Appreciate the call.
Okay, guys.
All right. Phil is on the line with a comment about wind crops. Hi, Phil.
How's it going, worms?
Good.
As always, love the show. You saved my bacon a number of times. I just wanted to lay comment to what Lance was kind of talking about as far as Laura, but I've been using pole beans and cobra beans as a barrier crop around my garden for the last 2 or 3 years, and it has helped not only cut down on cross-pollination where I don't want it, but the ones that I continually replant continually get stronger and bigger and more prolific over these last 3 or 4 years. And so the yield is just tremendous. And so I think it's definitely worthwhile to think about how you're laying out your garden as a home gardener, but in relation to the wind. And it just, when you were talking, I was like, this is it. Bingo.
Yeah. Yeah, plant your tall stuff on the windward side. Is that?
Yep, exactly. And that definitely helped cut down on some of the cross-pollination that I wasn't looking for.
Yeah. So sunflowers are notorious for sucking up all the pollen in the air. And so that's...
And that's my first barrier.
Yeah. No, so any pollen in the air, they're such a big flower, composite flower, that they actually suck up all the extra pollen in the air.
Wow.
Awesome. Anyway, thank you so much, Worms.
Thanks.
Thank you, Phil.
This should be an hour long.
Appreciate that. We could talk. All right. Thanks.
Take care.
Okay.
Yeah, we could talk with Laura for an hour for sure.
Yeah.
I think we'll have her back when we start talking more about seed saving. Both Laura Parker from High Desert Seed and Lance are going to be at the Seed Swap, which is happening on March 5th at the Hearth here in downtown Paonia. That's going on from 3 to 6 o'clock. You guys are going to be talking on a seed panel, right?
Yeah, I think that's like 4:30 or 5 to 6.
Right. Okay. That's going to be good. I mean, we're rolling right into the season right now.
Yeah.
I can see Laura's brain's like, oh, I better get back up there. Get going. I want to remind everybody, too, that next week, next Tuesday, is the winter arbol market at the Hearth.
Oh, okay.
So Valentine's Day market over there. Yeah. Laura, just a pleasure to have you. I'd like to invite you back again as we talk about seeds and get into the season. You got so much going on. It's great to have a conversation with you.
Yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm. I'd love to come back.
Great. All right. That's going to do it for us tonight on As the Worm Turns. We'll see you next week. It's How on Earth and then State of the Union.
State of the Union.
Coming up at 7. All right. Thank you both. Thank you, Laura.
Thank you.
Have a good evening.
Slow and faster. I don't know who you took a shine to or who you're about to make a sign to. I got a gal that I love so. Low, little low and low.